Audience members and distinguished regents and former regents that are here with us, and distinguished regents that are at the front part of the table. My name is Jim Erickson. I am the Orientation Committee Chairman of the RCAC, and I will let we have two other members here to introduce themselves.
I'm Harriet Porter, and I am one of the two vice chairs of the RCAC.
Shelley Bach, RCAC.
A new one. Rila Quas, RCAC.
Ah, a new member of the RCAC.
Right.
Nice of you to join us. This is your first rodeo, as we say?
Exactly.
And the candidates will remember that you did not sit in on this
right. This
first round, because you are a recent appointee.
Yeah.
Thank you for joining us. We appreciate that. And
George Sundstrom, representing the 8th District. Well, RCAC too, but the 8th District representative.
And we've had a history also of asking those in the audience to identify themselves before we start. So if you would, Regent Devine, please.
Tom Devine. I'm the most recently elected regent from last April 4th, from the 2nd Congressional District.
I'm Maureen Reed, formerly on the Board of Regents for 8 years, and the immediate past chair of the University of Minnesota Alumni Association.
My name is Ken Savory. I'm a staff member to the Board of Regents, and I work in the McNamara Alumni Center.
Matt Muskin.
I'm Kay Adams. I'm the Mountain Center.
And I'm Diane Henry-Wagenstein. I'm the assistant director of the LCC and also staff of the RCAC.
Whom without which we could not function. So thank you, Diane and Sally. They're double booked today, so they'll be switching back and forth. Our agenda today is fairly simple. It is the orientation committee, and it is what it speaks of. We are here to orient you candidates that are going across the street, as we say, to the process that you have probably already entered into. I suspect all of you have made at least one venture across the street since your nomination and recommendation. So with that, I'm going to call first. Well, our guests, maybe we're going to have to switch around here, aren't we? I understand that Senator Bonhoff is in a caucus, and Representative Pawlowski is not here. So maybe we'll switch it up and look down the agenda. But before we do that, let me go around and ask everybody at the table to introduce yourself and the slot for which you have been nominated.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dean Johnson from Wilmer, currently serving on the Board of Regents at an at-large position.
Hi, I'm Linda Cohen. I'm currently the chair of the board, and I'm serving with Dean at another at-large position, which is up.
Dennis Nguyen, live in Minneapolis and running for the 5th congressional seat.
Kelly Smith from Belle Plaine, and I'm a candidate for the at-large positions.
Peggy Lucas, I live in the 5th, but I am a candidate for at-large.
Drew Caviel, candidate for student at-large.
My name is Chris Tassett. I'm originally from Montevideo, Minnesota, and I'm a candidate for student at-large as well.
Good afternoon, Abdul Omari. I don't know if it's by design that we're sitting together, but I'm also a student at-large candidate.
Hi, I'm Jessica Hasten. I'm running for the 5th congressional seat.
Okay. And Lois Jacobson is joining us.
Josephson.
Josephson, yes, right. Josephson. I sit next to her all the time. I should know that. Lois is here with us. Okay, it looks like we're going to change our agenda. And I guess I'll go to Maureen and ask her to come up. And since, Maureen, if you'd pick up your name, your tent badge there, so we know that it's you. And I think we'll double book in this sense. Tom, would you join her at the table? I think perhaps we can have the benefit of both of your wisdom with slightly different perspectives. Maureen is speaking to us about the Alumni Association perspective, but of course is a former regent also, and can also, and then Tom, as he said, is the most recent one who has had the opportunity to be vetted by the legislature. and that fresh memory is in his mind. The way I'd like to proceed is ask you first, Maureen, to give your general comments, and then maybe we'll let Tom do the same to embellish them from his perspective. And then I want this to be very interactive. Those of you who are running for the Board of Regents, it is not a place to be silent. It's not a place where Clarence Thomas would look very good. We'd encourage this to be after they have made their case in chief about what you can expect. I hope there's some dialogue, and I'd ask you to ask them the kind of questions that will inform you and will help inform them. So thank you very much. I'll begin with the former regent and chair of the board, Maureen Reed.
Thank you very much, Mr. Erickson. It's just a great honor to be with your committee and with the candidates for the positions of regents that are open this session. It is, seems like yesterday, 1997, actually, when I cruised these halls and sat in the very seats that you are sitting in here today. But my perspective today is a twofold perspective, as Mr. Erickson laid out. The one perspective is as the immediate past chair of the University of Minnesota Alumni Association, and the other is the perspective of a past chair of the Board of Regents. These are different perspectives, but I think complementary perspectives, and I believe that sketching them out a little bit for you may give a sense of what these, how these different groups play together in the sandbox and what is important for the state of Minnesota and particularly the University of Minnesota. The University of Minnesota Alumni Association exists to advance the excellence of the University of Minnesota. So the Alumni Association, perhaps unlike alumni associations elsewhere, is not primarily a booster club, a blue line club, a goal line club. It is an organization of very passionate alums who want to see this University of Minnesota be better than it has ever been. We want the next generation of students to have experiences, whether it be in their education or their research opportunities or their opportunities to interact with their fellow students. We want the students of tomorrow to have a even better experience than what we had as alums going years back. And on the Alumni Association, the Alumni Association has for years taken a very keen interest in this region's candidate selection process. And it's taken a keen interest for a couple of reasons. First of all, we have had the experience of seeing when it didn't work so very well. And given the necessity of having exceptionally strong governance at the University of Minnesota Board of Regents, the University Alumni Association knows that without strong governance, the rest you can just kiss it goodbye. So we are keenly interested in the governance of the University of Minnesota being exceptionally strong. We are also interested, as an alumni association, of seeing not just a short-term vision, but a longer-range vision for the University of Minnesota as a whole. Now, I referenced that sometimes the University Alumni Association has been in the position of seeing a board that is well-functioning and focused on governance, and sometimes there have been an experience that, where the Alumni Association is not necessarily seeing that to be the case. So rather than focus on what is not the case, if I could focus on the two or three items that actually characterize, in the opinion of the Alumni Association, what is good governance? What is a well-functioning board, and what are the characteristics of a well-functioning board? First and foremost, the Alumni Association believes that there is a very strong and important difference between governance and management. And our advice to any candidates who are looking to be regents, that is on the governing board, that they draw a very sharp distinction between those two functions. Both are extremely important functions. The management function held by the administration of the University of Minnesota and the governance function held by the Board of Regents. only the Board of Regents is the only entity that is the governance of the organization, the university as a whole. And it is very important in the eyes of the Alumni Association to know the difference between governance and management. Knowing the difference is not sufficient. One actually has to be able to observe that there is a difference and not cross the line. So I would imagine that if your process of exploring your potential to be on the Board of Regents is anything like mine, you will be asked by legislators, what do you think governance consists of, and what would you do under circumstance A or circumstance B? Sometimes these individuals, the legislators that are going to be in the end selecting you, will themselves have a very clear notion of what is the difference between governance and management, and sometimes they won't see it the same way that you do. So my advice would be that you know in your own heart what is that difference and how you would play that difference out if you were fortunate enough to be in the role of one of the 12 regents of the University of Minnesota. The second point that I would make related to the role of the Board of Regents is that the state of Minnesota absolutely requires that this University of Minnesota be firing on all eight cylinders, and I say eight cylinders, and firing on all eight cylinders and driving this institution forward, the very lifeblood of Minnesota, the economy of Minnesota, the future of Minnesota, depends on the University of Minnesota being just going gangbusters. And so my second piece of advice is, try to uncover, if you will, what is your passion about this institution and what do you bring forward that others may not bring or that the sitting regents do not bring. So there will be four that go forward this year. There are eight that already are seated on the Board of Regents, not up for re-election this year. And what do you bring to the mix? The third point that I would make, and this will be my final point from the standpoint of that of the Alumni Association, is that we see the governance of the University of Minnesota being a team sport. So there is no such thing as a solo actor. There might be a solo opinion, and it is very important to bring that opinion forward. But in the end, the action of the Board of Regents is a team sport. And the more you can discern what is your role as a team player and how you would bring that to the table, not deep-sixing your own passions and your own interests, but bringing your own talents and passions and interests to the fore as one player among 12 is going to be extremely important. It does, in the eyes of the University of Minnesota Alumni Association, no good for the Board of Regents to be seen as a divisive body that can't get anything done. Even on our larger political scale, we don't like to see that in action. The population of Minnesota and Minnesotans don't like it when they don't see adult behavior and team-like activity going on at the Board of Regents. So how does one disagree and yet not be disagreeable? How do you disagree and put an alternative viewpoint forward and then either have that prevail or have it not prevail and be, and you able to get on the train that is moving and forward it in the right direction? So those are the things that's important to the University of Minnesota Alumni Association. We take a keen interest in what the Board of Regents does. We take a keen interest in the University of Minnesota as a whole because we know that our students and the next generation of alums depends on you on the Board of Regents conducting your work in the very best and highest way. I won't get into any personal stories at this point about my time in running twice for the Board of Regents. I was fortunate to have been elected both times. But if there is any deep exploration that any of you wish to do, I am completely an open book, and I will tell you anything you want to know, even those things that are maybe a little bit difficult to talk about.
Thank you, Maureen. I see we've been joined by our two distinguished chairs, and I think I'm going to then go back and revert to the agenda so we can put them on and bring you back for questions and for Tom's presentation. So, Chair Bonhoff and Chair Pawlowski, would you please take the podium. There's an agenda there on the table that you can take, and there's some tent signs for your names, which Lois is going to give you back. And we'll go back to the very first item and welcome you, as you, as chairs say, welcome you to the committee. I'd like actually to ask these candidates to go around and introduce themselves again so that you can see their names, but I'd like to do that one more time for your benefit. So if we could start here, and we have members of the RAC and then candidates also. So please, Lois, would you start and introduce yourself so they know who we're speaking to?
I'm a member of RCAC, Lois Josephson.
George Sundstrom, a member of the RCAC.
Dean Johnson, current member of the Board of Regents.
Linda Cohen, current member of the Board of Regents and chair.
Dennis Nguyen, running from the 5th Congressional District.
Kelly Smith from Belle Plaine, running for the at-large position.
Peggy Lucas from Minneapolis. I live in the 5th, but I'm a candidate for at-large.
Drew Cavio, candidate for student at-large.
My name is Chris Tosted, and I'm a candidate for student at-large as well.
Hello, Abdul Omari, student at-large.
Hi, I'm Jessica Hasten. I'm running for the 5th Congressional seat.
I'm Rima Kwas, member of the RCAC.
Shelley Buck, member of the RCAC.
Harriet Porter, vice chair of the RCAC.
Chairs, as you say, welcome to the committee. Senator Bonoff, would you start and make your presentation to the committee on what they, or would you like to start, okay. Jean?
Senator Bonoff has her committee in about 15 minutes.
Then we'll.
She's got to leave to chair.
Representative Chair Pawlowski, would you go first then, sir?
Go ahead. No, you go ahead,
sure. You asked for a legislative perspective, and I'm not too sure if you really want one, but I'll give you one. I think the process, and I want to thank all of you for volunteering your time, first of all. It is commendable that people will take this much time to invest in higher education and in Minnesota. And frankly, if you assessed your own recommendations over the last few years and the way the legislature has handled them, we would both have to agree that we have slipped into almost a purely political process, and that some of the recommendations you've made have been of individuals whose primary background would be partisan politics. When those recommendations are made, you should not be surprised if the legislature responds not only in kind, but multiplies your partisan recommendation. So it is unfortunate that, and I was here when this was created and when it was changed, and we made every attempt to take it out, but it always comes back. And I think it might reflect the fact that the regents are Minnesota's version of the House of Lords. You get a nice title, you get a robe, you get a good place to meet, and you have almost no influence over what it is you've just been appointed to. And the recent problem with the university, and I'll point it out here, my name is misspelled, by the way, and I'll take this with me as a future reference. The recent problems at the U reflect simply accounting measures, not labeling accordingly to what I've been told by President Kaler and others, administrators properly for years on end, reporting it improperly for years on end, and neither one of those could be caught. If you're not recording how many administrators you have properly, if you're not reporting it properly, as a member of the legislature now for 27 years, I wonder what else isn't being properly recorded properly. And you know where I'm going to take the House this session. I just met with three members of the U's fiscal team for the third time in order to get a clear understanding of what I'd like presented. But frankly, I'd like us to move out of the partisanship. You have great candidates, but try to make this as nonpartisan as you can And hopefully, maybe for once, we can rise above our base element and make great choices, because you have some great people running. That's my perspective, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We have, I think, 8 or 9 of those candidates.
I know, I met with
And so they would, I think, like to hear from you. We appreciate your perspective. But they'd like to hear from you about when they go across the street, how you'd like to interact with them. What advice could you give them as they are candidates, as one who will play a very large role in that selection process?
We never see a regent usually until they're running for office. You can make all the promises you want, but they're almost never in committee or doing really what they should be, a very hard oversight of the University of Minnesota. I can't tell you what to do once you get to be a regent, but frankly, the performance of higher education over the last 6 years, if record cuts, record tuition increases, and record debt are something to be proud of, then the regents have done an outstanding job, because they've allowed that to happen at the University of Minnesota. I have not had one region complain to me that these cuts were bad, that there was harm, that there should be something other than silence. Just ignore it, because you can raise tuition, you can raise fees, and you have an alumni base that's second to none in Minnesota. So if you're not going to complain about the cuts, if you're not going to complain about the record tuition increases, if you have no concern over having students graduate with enough debt that it'll take a decade or more to pay it off, I can't help you.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I'm going to defer now to Senator Bonhoff, because she has to leave in whatever time she has to leave. So please, Senator Bonhoff,
thank you,
welcome
Mr.
to the
Chair.
Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, as well as candidates who are here as candidates. First of all, I want to tell you how proud I am to chair higher ed alongside with Chair Pulowski, because I know that Chair Pulowski's words must in some ways seem disturbing and provocative, but I think that from where he comes, we are lucky that we have Chair Pulowski taking higher ed. And so we will work in partnership. I will, I'm sure, bring a different style to my work, and I will bring a different process, but I won't bring a different commitment, because I am equally troubled, and make no mistake about this, I am equally strongly troubled by what's happening with our young people. On the one hand, we say there is nothing more important than having each and every student graduate from our higher ed institutions, whether it be a one-year certificate, a two-year program, a four-year, and at the other, in the very same breath, we're putting obstacle after obstacle. So then you say, well, how does this relate to you sitting around this table? Well, the first thing I would say is I believe the qualifications that the Advisory Council has used to pick your regents are lacking. I think they're lacking in that they don't provide enough detailed specification that would allow us to get across the goal line with regard to our overall mission. So, for example, the University of Minnesota has a three-pronged mission: research mission, its education mission, and its service mission. I did not see in those qualifications anything about what we're looking for to advance the university in each of those three, and then how our candidates who are running, what skills they bring to bear that would do that, and what skills we think are required of them. What do we ask of them in terms of their fundraising prowess? The state isn't a blank checkbook, so what do we expect from our regents in terms of their ability to attract large-scale donors with regard to our research mission, to bring in the biggest corporate, you know, partnerships possible? I think regents have an opportunity to lead in many ways. They can lead in an oversight function, asking those tough questions, holding our management accountable, but also they can lead as partners with regard to the financial mission and with regard to the service mission. So I raise those questions because I think the political nature is a fallout of the structure. And if you had a much more defined structure of what you were looking for in a regent, I think you'd find the political part of that discussion would fall away.
with regard to those who are now running, one of the things we're going to do in the Senate differently than we've done before is we're going to ask those who are running to come before our committee earlier in the process rather than the first time hearing from them in the joint committee, because we actually do want to get to know each and every one of you who's running and understand what you bring to the table and allow us to have a much broader, fuller discussion. We think that the process in the past has been a lot of behind closed doors lobbying, and then the meetings have been, in fact, perfunctory after everybody's really come to a decision. And I want to make sure our committee has a greater role in the decision-making process than perhaps they have in the past. And we haven't even had a chance to discuss this, so I don't know how this fits with what's happening in the House, but I suspect that Chair Pawlowski, too, is not going to be just a rubber stamp, whatever a group comes up with. So I feel passionate about the opportunity, and you probably have read that I, along with Senator Bach, have sent a very pointed letter to the University of Minnesota with regard to the matter in the Wall Street Journal, and my take on it is everywhere in state government you've had to confront that we're organized in a model that's no longer sufficient for the 21st century economy. So there isn't any institution that would now not be facing the pressures to do significant redesign. Corporate America has had to do this over the last decade. And so the kind of analysis that the university I've asked for them to undertake is just to give us the facts. Analyze where you are with regard to your administration, your function, your headcount, your salary structure, your layers, all of it. I just want to see the facts, as does the governor, the people of Minnesota. I cannot tell you the outpouring of constituent appreciation ever since we made that request, of people just thanking us. They just want the facts. I told President Kaler an A on that exercise won't be a report that says you're doing everything right. An A will be that you're got a plan for how you're going to restructure and redesign in keeping with 21st century needs. So that's where I'm coming from. As it relates to the region candidates, we thank you so much for putting your hat in the ring. There's nothing more important to our state than strong leadership at our university, and the regents are where it's really the buck stops. So thank you.
thank you
for your service as the advisor.
Thank you, Madam and Mr. Chair. As I might pick up on Chair Pawlowski's comments about the political nature of the discussion, and I might say this, Representative Pawlowski has won, I think, 13 elections or 14, and you, two, I think, three?
No. Oh.
Four, Senator. I'd like you to give these nine folks around the table that are candidates and have a smaller constituency than you. They have a constituency of 201 people. What advice would you give to them about how they go about enhancing their candidacy so they can win the be selected for the? What general advice about how they should conduct themselves? Can you give them any of the people here?
Well, Mr. Chair and members, I think you all probably know that the real decision makers are the people on the committee. So you've got twice as many House members, I'm sure, so the House is more important to you. And then you've got your Senate members of the committee. And that's just simple math. I mean, that's really true. It's the truth with all the votes in the House and the Senate, too. So if I were spending your time, I'd make sure to understand the math. But you have the House committee members and the Senate committee members, and you want to have a personal relationship with each one on those committees, so you want to be very aggressive about getting on their calendars and talk about what it is you bring to the mission. And then you probably are aware, but if you're running for a particular district, then you want to make sure the representatives and senators from that district choose you, because that's, that's also who the committees will listen to. And then I do have, just to make a comment, because I know I've seen that Peggy Lucas was originally running for the 5th District and now has been put forward by the council as an at-large, and I want you to know that we would have the flexibility to consider Peggy's candidacy at either, and I'm sure you know that, but it just was worth saying for the record.
And have done that.
and have done that.
As recently as last year.
Representative Plosky, please.
I taught American government for 37 years at Winona Senior High. I didn't teach Democratic Party government or Republican government. I taught American government. There were students who took me, despite the fact my wall was divided into a left and right, and we had political paraphernalia on those two walls commensurate with the left and right, and one of my yard signs, would actually leave after a term and go, I don't know which party he belongs to. When I ran, I said I would represent this district, I would represent this state, and I would represent this nation, and if under duress, then I represent a political party. But those three came first, and they have to come first. What has wrecked this country has been partisan politics and game playing on a colossal scale, and it brought this country to its knees. We almost fell into another depression because we had to be partisan. So I would hope all of you would take a look at the University of Minnesota as a nonpartisan public institution, and you represent, you do what's best for it, even when it's hard. And Mr. Erickson knows there are many votes I've taken over the last few years that have certainly not been partisan. And that is what you should do as a regent. I still think you're a House of Lords. You got a nice title, nice robes, great spot, but no political power. And just remember, even Great Britain is thinking of eliminating the House of Lords. So...
Respecting your time again, I want to open up the table to, and I encouraged before you came here, the candidates to be proactive candidates. That's what we look to them to be on the regents, not silent. So I'll ask now for any candidates that have questions of these two distinguished chairs. Yes, sir. Mr. Smith.
To either chair, do you foresee that our meeting in front of the joint committee would come after the report back from the University of Minnesota that you have requested, or will it
probably
be prior?
Yeah.
Okay.
But I watch our committee hearings very closely. Occasionally, they do send very loud signals. And this one is going to be on legislative oversight. And if you don't know how it's done, watch. It's about to start.
Questions from other candidates? Demonstrate your willingness to step up to the plate. Regent Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Two questions. Have you tentatively established a time schedule for the joint committee, and ultimately, I believe by February 28th, the joint House-Senate?
Yeah, we can send it to all of you. Just email us. We'll send it to you. We've got one for you.
Our staff just completed that task.
It was just completed last week, last Friday, I think.
All right, thank you. Second question, Mr. Chairman. Have you established the rules? And let me give you an example. I know sometime in the regent process on the joint committee of the House and Senate that had to take a majority of both the House and the Senate to advance, and sometimes it just took a majority of the House and Senate members to advance.
Those rules are established. We'll send them to you.
Okay.
But remember, controlling our members is another thing. Rules can be changed quite often when we're meeting.
I understand that, Mr. Plowster.
I'm just watching everyone.
Other questions from candidates?
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman, I have a question.
Yes, sir.
I guess this is to some extent directed at Chairman Plowski. So you've talked a lot about what the university as a whole can be doing to strengthen and foster the relationship between the university and the state, and you've put it in the context of partisanship. Are there objective actions that we should look to strive for as regents in our own course as we would potentially serve that we could do within our service to the university to foster that relationship on our own accord?
Yes, there are. I would meet with your local reps and senators. I would meet with the reps and senators of every place there is a campus of the University of Minnesota. And I would make sure that your alumni meet locally with their representatives and senators. Not a mass email of 1,000 people that you send out to everyone. That's meaningless. If it isn't local, you're not going to have any impact. And higher ed has been cut by historic amounts for the last 6 years. No one complained No one, until Brunix. Brunix at the end blistered us, and he should have. We should have been blistered at the beginning and every session, and we should have been told with accurate data what the consequences were of those votes. It's easy to vote to cut you. It's easy to vote for historic tuition. It's easy to vote for historic debt if there are no consequences. In that sense, that's not political. That's what this democracy is about. And if you want to protect the university and its integrity, then you better get involved, and you better start telling us the truth. I hope, Mr. Chair, there's no gag order on speaking to a regent, and I bring it up because in the Minsky system under the previous chancellor, there was a gag order. If you were an administrator in Minsky, you could not speak to a legislator without permission. So I would hope that there is no gag order here.
Mr. Chair, members, I right now have a higher ed committee to chair, and so it's been an honor to be with you and to have this conversation. My door is open, and I welcome your feedback. I welcome your comments, and I look forward to meeting those candidates who I haven't yet met.
Thank you, Chair Bonhoff. We'll dismiss you. Representative Pulaski, would you stay if you want?
Thank you for more questions.
Okay, fine.
I have a meeting coming up in a bit, but I can say.
You tell us when you would like to leave, but I think we've benefited by your wisdom, and I'll continue to open the floor for candidates, questions for candidates.
Thank you, Chair. If you may, please, I'm going to be a little bit more specific about the role that the three of us would play if we advance as a student. And I'm just kind of curious about how you see the student position and the student role and the interactions, if it's any different at all, or how you see that looking.
The most curious thing I've seen in the last 6 years is the fact that the students have had no complaint on the burden that they're carrying. Even though that burden went to record heights, nothing, not a whimper. Now, maybe it is because they're carrying a couple of jobs, they're trying to get done in 4 years, they're seeing nothing but tuition increases on their backs, and they really don't have extra time to do it. But your student organization should have some focal point. And if the focal point is to follow the role model of the regents, that didn't work. So your focal point has to be you and what your future looks like. And if you want a future of $30,000 in debt or more, if you want a future of almost unlimited tuition increases for your children, we're well on the way to doing it. I would hope our focal point would be on stabilizing tuition. I don't think we can lower it yet, but at least stabilizing it so you don't get that increase. And then making sure that there is accessibility in this system and accessibility for the middle class. We need every talented person we can get. We desperately need them now. We can't shut them out. So they have to have the opportunities that I had, that you had, that I'd like my grandson to have. My grandson's 5. Until we paid off this last part of the K-12 budget, if we hadn't paid that off, it would have taken maybe 20 years to pay off what we borrowed from K-12. He'd be 25 by the time we paid off what we borrowed. That's unacceptable. It is simply unacceptable. So that's what you have to be pushing for. It's the next generation, and the one after that we have to worry about. And it's making sure the University of Minnesota can do the best job it can. And frankly, that's not been publicized much lately, locally or nationally. But the students, you better start telling us. You shouldn't be afraid to tell me the truth. I can handle it. Believe me. And that's not a line from a certain movie.
Thanks.
Other candidates? Mr. Johnson?
Representative Pulaski, looking at this at way up here as regards to University of Minnesota administration, management, putting forth a budget, and the role of a regent in the governance. Admittedly, I have struggled with that. I told you that in your office. I told the RCAC about the governance, management, administration issue. I'll just offer this thought, and I was listening to you very carefully. Had the existing regents, or the way we try to operate is through our respective chair, so we don't have 12 voices, we have one voice after discussion, public debate. Had we criticized the last 2 to 4 years, I think you and other legislators would have considered us too political, saying, wait a minute, they're just rattling the empty wagon over there on the Minneapolis campus. I think we work very hard not to be political. As I said to the group earlier, I can't remember the last time I've ever heard a discussion on Democrat or Republican, conservative, liberal. It's about, you know, the University of Minnesota. So, if you will, we're cautious. Maybe we're trained to be cautious about that and work through the administration, you know, and through our chair after conversation and votes. What I'm hearing you say is, no, speak up. Speak up individually, collectively. If you don't like something, you know, rattle the cages and say, you know, this isn't going the right direction.
Well, if the right direction is what's happened in Minnesota to higher education, then I beg to differ. I think this is totally the wrong direction. You familiar with your Dante, the Inferno, mm-hmm. the vestibule? Mm-hmm. You remember who he and Virgil saw in the vestibule? Billions of naked people running after a banner in a storm that was unceasing, being stung by flies and wasps, and the blood from their body and the pus forming huge pools in this cavern. And as they splashed through the pools, there were loathsome worms sucking up their blood and pus. And Dante asked Virgil, what is their crime? What is their sin that they are punished for eternity? He said, these are the people in life who took no position. They were neither good nor evil. They were silent. I tell this to my students the first day. That's the biggest of the circles of hell. Let's get the Regents out of there.
Perhaps on a different note. Mr. Chair, we have at the table three candidates for the student regent position. And it's probably a little, since they're younger and don't have the resumes that the folks, some of the other candidates do, it's a little harder, I suspect, for the legislature to choose among them. What advice would you give to those three students as to how you yourself or you see your committee or the legislature choosing among them? What traits are you going to be looking for that they should be addressing and telling you about? I think it's a good example of a specific question that you can take a position on.
It's going to depend on the legislator you talk to. And I would take a look at their background so you understood where they're coming from. And if it's a teacher like me, someone whose family has been involved in education, I think you know what you should be talking to me about. I have a little experience in a certain sport. That might be helpful, particularly if you play by the rules. So any of those things would be helpful to you. And then be honest in what you want to see done at this university. You're speaking for all the students. All the students now who have record debt. All the students now who are going to graduate and may not be able to find a job commensurate with that skill, which is another problem. We haven't been adding enough jobs to make sure we do it. So I would take a look at the individual legislator and address them that way. What other committees are they on? What are their interests? What's their background? You've got some interesting people here who actually came from other countries, and now they're running for regent. That's a tremendous advantage for us. You might be in the same position. So tell us. Tell us where you're from. Tell us what you've done.
Any response or further questions, gentlemen? Then I'm going to, how much more time can you give us there?
Oh, I'll stay for a bit. I've been late all day.
All right. I appreciate your candor, and I think that's what this group is looking for, some guidance. Perhaps at the other end of the experience scale, you might give the candidates for at-large regent, particularly because there are two incumbents, your advice about and perspective on that seat and the value of incumbency.
I think I have privately. Unfortunately, the legislature has played with that one maybe the most. And we've yanked people from the audience, from the gallery. It's almost like a game show. Come on down, we'll make a region. And I would watch very carefully whoever might be running who isn't on this list. And for all of you, I would be asking questions about how much support any of those individuals might have. And it might be people who simply weren't moved forward, but it might be other individuals who have the political clout to be chosen that way. So, because some of them might be in the fifth, some of them might be at the at-large, keep your eyes and ears open. And don't be afraid to ask legislators if they've heard about it and what their position might be on it. And I've got one more thing. Yeah, we were with Governor Dayton just now. This is the first time I've ever heard a governor of this state put forward, I shouldn't say the first time, it's the first time in a long time I've seen a higher ed budget with actually a proposal for new money in it. The only thing he qualified, and that was with us, was the U. You don't get the money unless you prove that the Wall Street Journal isn't true. This is from the governor of this state. I hope in the next budget cycle there will be nothing like that. You won't have to prove a Wall Street Journal article true in order to get funding. Or false. In this case, it'd be false.
Any other questions? Mr. Chair, thank you for indulging us. Thank you for your candor and your literary illusions.
When you teach history for 4 decades, I actually taught Dante. I loved it. I would tell my teachers, tell my students that some of your teachers say, go to hell. I took them there, brought them back. I could only hope that they would smile again. So thank you.
Thank you. Wow.
Well, I think I can say that, and Ms. Mreed and Mr. Divino and our two incumbents, that was probably the most unusual presentation this committee has heard in a long time. Quite interesting. So we'll take it for what it's worth. Now we're back perhaps to the more direct advice as you were giving Ms. Mreed, and now we'll turn it to Mr. Divino to talk about the perspective of having most recently gone through that process, not under Representative Pawlowski's chairmanship, but under a different process. I suspect it might be a little bit different this year. Mr. Divino, Regent Divino.
Thank you, Jim. Well, first of all, welcome to all of you here this afternoon, and I, too, want to congratulate you for putting yourselves out there and for going through this process. This is, as it's been explained to you here in very sober terms, is a very, very important responsibility here in the state of Minnesota. The Board of Regents and the University of Minnesota is a significant economic driver here of the state. We're one of the largest employers with 25,000 employees here that work for the University of Minnesota. We are the main flagship of higher education in Minnesota. And obviously, our role in research is the most significant within the state of Minnesota right now. And even that's being challenged right now in a variety of different ways. That said, I want to thank all of you, like I said, on behalf of the Board of Regents for being a part of the process and putting yourselves out here, particularly for the time that's involved. I've gone through this process twice in a year. I filled in with a resignation of a regent. Went through the process to be elected and was not successful. That did not dishearten me. In fact, the day following my election when I was defeated, I came back up, and it was a political process, and I talked to many of the people that had promised votes and whatnot and said I understood what happened and walked away with my head high that I had done everything that I could within my power. It was nothing about me personally, but rather to drop back into a political process. That said, the second time through, it was a different experience, but the experience of the first part brought me around for the part of this, set me up for, in part, the second experience that I went through. And in looking at that, contrary to what was said here, I ran on a small platform with some significant issues that I felt were really facing the University of Minnesota. And specifically, I talked about four-year graduation. I talked about financial accountability, and that became part of what I really talked about with each of the legislators. Mm-hmm. As some of you know or might not know, I spent time with 141 legislators the first time through. I made a real commitment, and I had attended both the year before my candidacy, the year of my candidacy, and after I was defeated, I went to almost every single Senate and House higher ed meeting to listen to the stories and listen to very specific comments that both, well, Terry was not on higher ed at that point, but listening to Representative Pawlowski's comments, I've heard him speak very sternly, very articulately what his concerns were relative to the University of Minnesota. So that said, I also come with a couple of other perspectives. Before I ran 2 years ago, I also called all of the student representatives and I talked to each one of them that would talk to me. I didn't get to all of them, but I got to almost everyone, and I had 3 calls into each one of them to hear their perspective of what they felt was important about the University of Minnesota. And like the student experience, hearing from the students specifically about what their agenda items were, was very important to, for me to understand what it was and augment what I was listening to within House and Senate higher ed. I also had the good fortune of having spent 35 years at the University of Minnesota as a volunteer in a variety of different aspects. So I came in with a little bit of a little more unusual process than some, but that is an instant qualifier by any stretch of the imagination. All it did is broaden my awareness and some of the individuals that work for the university. And now I come with another perspective right now. Since I've become a regent, I now have 2 sons at the University of Minnesota. So Twin Cities campus, so I have a perspective also that's a very meaningful perspective, both as a parent and as a regent, and going through the process as a parent through a parent's eyes this last year has been very eye-opening to me in terms of what students and their parents are going through and how they view the University of Minnesota in terms of how they interact both for the orientation process and the administrative processes and so on. So with that little background, so to speak, on me, I wanted to leave really with three comments. And I'm gonna comment just a little bit to what Gene said, double back on a couple of points that he made relative to that. But the 3 things that I wanted to leave with all of you today was really use these visits as an opportunity to learn about the University of Minnesota. And I say that genuinely in that every single legislator has an opinion about the University of Minnesota. And I made very copious pages of notes after I met with each of the legislators to really get a feel, a real understanding about what each of them had. You're going to quickly see, those of you that have now met some of them, there's going to be some common themes that are going to pop up right away. But what you're also drilling down into is to see other things that particular constituents that they've heard from and what their issues are about the University of Minnesota and what the topics are, what are the things that are important that are not being addressed, because those are symptomatic of maybe other issues that aren't really become part of the public domain yet as clearly as what Gene and both Terry talked about with the Wall Street Journal article specifically. That opportunity to listen is, and I want to repeat this, listening is important. We all have a tendency to try to come in and sell ourselves and sell whatever we think our views are or whatever, but before entering into that area, I really caution you and say, listen carefully to what's being said to you so you understand what's being said, what they're trying to explain to you. The second point that I want to leave with you is not to try to respond to the criticisms of specific issues. And one of the things that is often the case is a lot of time legislators have developed impressions or stories that have been written in the media or been on television or been in the blogs or whatever. You need to be cautious of that. And I say that because, you know, as many of you probably have maybe learned, and if you go back and look at Eric Kaler's presentation last week to Terry's committee, very specifically, he took apart the factual issues that were not correct in the Wall Street Journal article in great detail, in graphs and format. And sometimes the issues that you read about in the media are sanitized or they're marginalized or they're put together in such a fashion that you really don't get all the facts, and it's hard to maybe compare apples and apples and keep on an apples-to-apples comparison level. And so the media shouldn't necessarily be the total source. And so when you start to react to a media story, you might be reacting to something that isn't necessarily factually correct. And so I put that word of caution out there about those, because most of these legislators realize you don't have a full command of the facts and information. You're learning about all these things, but not necessarily in a position to really take that apart and offer specific guidelines or specific things that you can bring about or do. And as it was pointed out, I just want to reiterate, we really work through the board with one voice, rather than having 12 of us as independent contractors all going out and speaking to the media and talking to the media and whatever. That isn't a healthy situation. You know, Fortune 500 companies don't operate that way. We don't operate that. And our goal is not to operate as a Fortune 500 company. But the consistency of a board, of having board leadership, and working with the administration is very important. And as Maureen very carefully outlined, the issues of governance versus the management issues of trying to fix specific things. And you're going to hear a lot of very specific things, like my kid can't get into school, or there's not enough Minnesota kids. It's very tempting to try to say, well, you're going to go on the board and you're going to fix those things. But that isn't the role of governance. The role of governance is to be above that and to work with the administration to define and to work through the committee structures to define what the issues are, reframe those issues, and then bring those about in an orderly process and not necessarily be reacting to whatever the media story of the week is relative to doing that. It's a much longer vision. And you got to remember that the University of Minnesota, with 25,000 employees, there's 12 regents, there's one president and his cabinet, his staff, which is maybe another dozen or so people. When you really look at what that is, to get 25,000 people to move in a different direction is not an overnight situation. It's like an aircraft carrier. Aircraft carriers can't make right-hand turns or left-hand turns. It takes a long time to move and make that turn. And so consequently, the processes that we have to all go through to bring about an orderly change and not a reactionary change is very important. It's very important in terms of how we operate. The one thing that I do want to mention is when the opportunity to learn is also the opportunity to get to know these individuals very well. You will be spending time with them. The process that they're offering here is totally different than what we've gone through, than what either Maureen and I went through in terms of this interviewing process before, or I shouldn't say the interviewing, but appearing before the committee, having an opportunity to speak, and all of that. But in the context of what you say in those remarks there, I hope you listen very carefully to what I mean in the first two points, because it's, you know, you're moving forward, but understanding the limitations of what you're going to have to work with until you get a full command of the information in front of you is going to be challenging. And then the third item that I want to leave with you is a piece of advice that my father, who's 97 years old, who worked within the University of Minnesota in a variety of different capacities as a volunteer 40 years ago. But he spent a lot of time in this building and across the street, and he made one very, very important comment to me, which at the end probably got me elected. He said, every legislator is a voter. Every legislator is a voter. Now, as it was referred to here and talked about, the process is a handful of people within Senate and House higher ed. The question, I don't know if I really heard the answer about how the rules work, if it's a majority of both committees or a majority of each Senate and House higher ed, I'm not sure. But the point is every single legislator votes. It's the only time that the legislature, the House and the Senate, come together to conduct any business. And this goes all the way back to 1851 when the University of Minnesota was set up. That process of the legislature, you know, when the state was set up, it was the only formal process that was put into place where the two bodies come together and conduct business. And so everybody gets a vote. And that those conventions have been cantankerous, they've been political, some have been smooth, they've been all sorts of various things. But the point is every single person votes. And I make that pronouncement in that it's a very political process, but I really got elected by the people of the opposite party than what I represent, interestingly, at the final vote count. And so I was able to strike a balance through that process, both the first and the second time, and it mattered. Every legislator is a voter. And what I did, and much like I do now as a regent, my responsibility is to represent the state of Minnesota and not to be political in this venue or that venue, but rather to balance that all out and do what's best for the people of Minnesota. And I ran my campaign on that basis. Now, I realize you run as, you know, with political affiliation, all of what goes with all of that. But at the end of the day, I rose above that, and that's what ultimately I think really got me elected to the Board of Regents, is I put that aside, not as a focus and whatnot, because a lot of stuff does happen in the back rooms, the smoke-filled rooms, as they were talking about. But I tried to run my campaign in an orderly fashion where I didn't necessarily use that as my primary driver in terms of what happened. And what's important to me now is those relationships that I built and the respect that I built in carrying that out became very important, and it will be important in terms of doing my job going forward. And let me say, you know, Representative Pawlowski said, you know, it's entirely political. It is a very political process. There's no question about it. But as we've learned, once you're on the Board of Regents, you'll learn, as poor as the system is, ours is one of the best in the country. We have diversity, we have equality, gender equality, we have a lot of things that a lot of boards don't have around the country. And in looking at that, as imperfect as it is, it's like a democracy. It's not perfect, but at the end of the day, it serves us well. I also brought a handout along that if you want to pick up at the end. This just happens to be Twin Cities campus because I've not seen one that's been put together, but it's what I call it's a fast fact sheet. It's an interesting little handout that talks a lot about the University of Minnesota, so if you want facts and figures or whatnot to talk about at the you know, about the university, it helps you because you might become a little more conversational what you do. Sorry for rambling on, but I did want to respond a little bit to what was said here earlier, you know, in the presentation.
Shelley, perhaps you could pick those up and pass them around because it might be valuable to have them in front of us while we're speaking. I'm just going to take the prerogative of the chair for a moment, and the reason, one reason that I'm the head of this committee is that I do spend some time with this Capitol, and I would tell the candidates just a couple things based on that. One is, it is very much like a political campaign, and I say political in the sense that you're being elected. I don't mean in the political sense, although there are elements of that too. And those of you who have run for office before know that only 10% of what you do to try and win is effective. The only trouble is you don't know which 10% it is, so you have to do it all. That's number one. Number two, you need to know your target, need to know your jury. As a lobbyist, I tell people I just argue to a different kind of a jury. It's a committee that sits around a room like this, not a jury of 12 people. So you need to know your jury. You should know that Senator Bonhoeff is a first-time member of the Higher Education Committee, and the ranking chair, ranking member of that committee in the Senate is the former chair. You need to kind of know what the perspectives they bring to the table. You should know that Representative Pawlowski has been on that committee for a long time and has very strong views, as we said, based on that. And again, the ranking member of that committee, the minority leader or the minority representative, was last year's chair. So those are two dynamics that you pay some attention to. So I think those are just know your audience, know who you're talking to, and when you talk to people as you go around in these individual conversations, I strongly urge you to know that anything you say can and probably will be reported. That just is axiomatic of this room and almost any, this building and almost anything. So there is, I think there are no private conversations. Anything you tell someone, I think will be, they'll tell someone else, and they'll, and just be aware of that. I think it's good advice. Those are my quick observations. I'm going to go back now to our, to let them follow up, and I'm going to ask them again. I'm going to tee you up this way as to put your hat on as a candidate, had you have been at this table before, you a candidate for regent. I suspect when you were first got the call that you were selected and now you have to come into this second process, you kind of said, well, let's see. You mapped out a game plan. I'm guessing that had you mapped out that game plan and came into this room and heard the presentation today, you might have changed that game plan a little bit. Am I wrong about that, or how might these candidates react to what they heard today from the chairs, who are very important players in this?
I was asking myself that very question as I was listening is would I have changed my message or my approach based on what I heard from these two individuals? And what I came down to is no, I would not have. These are two people who are highly positioned, and their opinions matter. And their opinions about who you are and what you bring matter. But you are what you are. And it is a terrible mistake, I think, as a candidate for anything, to have analyzed in your heart and in your head what it is you believe. And then you talk with one person and you start moving in a different direction. There are 201 people in this legislature and a much smaller subset in the ed committees. And you will be all over the map if you start mutating your message based on the last person that you spoke with. Now, that is not to say that what they say and think is unimportant. It is very important. And it's important for you to reflect on what they said and thoughtfully consider whether your opinion would change. But you cannot be blowing in the wind. And a blowing in the wind regent is a terrible regent. So you need to assess where you stand. You need to be educated and change your opinion when evidence and further thought on your part would cause you to move in a different direction. But I would underscore what you said, Regent Devine, is in the heat of the moment, never change your opinion. Never say, oh, well, you're so right, Senator so-and-so or Representative so-and-so. Now I'm going to take a different position here. You can say, I'm going to seriously consider what you said. You gave me a different thought that I had not thought of before. But you need to analyze that, and you don't need to feel like you're under the gun at the moment. I have a number of other reactions to what was said here by Senator Bonhoeff and Representative Pelosi. But
please,
Let me
ask the same question of Regent Devine, and on that, how might you have changed or would?
I don't think I would have changed the three points that I just gave you. You know, if you look at the three messages that I left with you, that would be consistent in terms of what I just discussed. In fact, the third one, everyone's a voter, is probably even more relevant to the whole process. And as Maureen pointed out, those two people are two decision makers in the process. But at the end of the day, they vote like everyone else. Not to say that they won't have a lot of influence on it, but within the caucus, there's also a lot of influence that gets weighed in to how they have to react to their caucus at the end of the day. And so I like to believe that I know that my candidacy, I was able to influence the caucus, even though the leadership had difficulty with some of what went on initially. It's not how it worked out at the end of the day, my sitting here now. So different things happen for different reasons. You have to stick to your set of principles, and you will have. And people will ask you to, you know, make an opinion and commit to some direction right now. And like Maureen pointed out, you've got 201 people that all have an opinion about what it should be. And for you to try to commit early on here to one without having all of the factual information, it's very difficult to do. There's another whole side to everything that goes on. And so, consequently, you want to be respectful. You want to take it in, make copious notes. But beyond that, you need time to evaluate, and you need to understand the other side of what happens in terms of what those decisions are that are made.
Let me actually do a little interactive section here before we come back, because perhaps some of the points you wanted to make, Regent Reed, might come up there. But I do want this to be interactive, and perhaps I would suggest that the panel might be a little less intimidated than having to talk to people they got to go and get a vote from. So I think that
feel free to ask anything as far as I'm concerned.
I'll ask everyone to have at it and ask the questions of these two from the perspective of what is their advice to you. Please, anybody? Who's next? Yeah, and you have to leave.
I have to leave, so I just want to apologize that I need to leave, and I appreciate very much having this information and hearing opinions and so on, and I think we're getting very good advice from a former regent and a current regent, so I take that what they're saying to heart.
Thank you, Chair Cohen. Ms. Lucas.
Well, I just have a question on your everybody has a vote, which, you know, I understand, but in the end, does it have to be a majority? I mean, do they thin people out? Do they, if you don't have a certain number of votes?
It's a majority of the 201 voters elect the regent, or regents, I should say.
So with multiple candidates.
They're voted on. Well, I shouldn't say that. You know, they can vote on slate, what they call slate, or they can vote individually. And it's really carried out. There'll be a recommendation from the committee, which is slate. And then from slate, they can deviate from slate if they so choose, which is the case, that each individual voter will participate in. And they don't vote slate necessarily, which is might be caucus vote, you know, completely straight line party vote. It doesn't necessarily end that way at the end of the day.
I think the answer to that is we perhaps don't know, because you have a new chair in the Senate who wasn't quite sure of the question that was asked by Mr. Johnson about, is it a majority of both bodies or together? And I guess we don't know yet, and that could be relevant. And that might be true also at the end. I don't know. Sally, do you have any insight about the full joint convention? Do you need a majority of both the Senate and the House, or is it a total combination? Total combination. So in joint convention, one vote is one vote. But in the committee, the joint committee, I think it has happened in the past more than often. It's you got to have to a majority of both. That apparently is not as that's not. I'm not sure how it happens. But Peggy, does that answer your question? I guess we don't know. Other than to say, on the I'll make this further lobbyist observation. Of the 201 legislators, you should all know that, and you do know, that fully or nearly a third of them are new to this building, brand new. And so that's a different kind of a person you're talking to than somebody who's been here for 30 years.
I might note that I talked to every one of the new legislators, and that list, my punch list, when I went through 2 years ago right now, I made sure that I met every single new legislator.
Further questions?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir.
Perhaps Ms. Olson, I think, was out of the room when I asked about the rules, and Representative Plowski said they're available.
I have a copy of the ones from last.
No, he talked. They talked about. They have the new ones, and perhaps you could see Mr. Melander and email them to the 9 or 10 of us. Would be helpful. Didn't I hear him correctly?
They just have done something soon, and I think that we'll rely on and Sally to get those out to you.
There's rules for two events. One is the joint. There's really three things. From the Senate perspective, my understanding, Senator Bonoff is going to ask each of us to appear for a 5-minute presentation. Whether there's question and answers at that point, I do not know. Second of all is the joint committee of the House and Senate, which numbers 28. And then thirdly, the advancement of a slate, one for each position. They may or may not do that. They have the prerogative to send that to the floor for a joint session, which must be done by the 28th of February, according to the Constitution. But would that be a reasonable request?
Sally, we'll get you all the information through, because apparently that's breaking news that we heard today, that something has been recently agreed to, and our staff will get everything that we can know from them when we can know them. Other questions? All right, then we'll go back to yes, sir.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I'm a little bit curious. Through the grapevine, I may have heard once or twice that there's some questions that may be asked of us by senators and representatives that, one, we may not see as extremely relevant to what we're doing, or two, perhaps even view as inappropriate. How would you recommend going about a question that in your mind has nothing to do with what's going on here, and just kind of, you know, everything, as you said, stays there and everything is out there? For example, if it is more of a political question that, you know, we may not want to answer because we're trying to maintain nonpartisanship and bipartisanship.
you will not, in many cases, know the reason behind the question. Some questions will be asked of you by a questioner, by a legislator who wants you to say smoothly, that is a bogus question, I'm not going to answer that. You will be set up to turn your back on certain questions. Other times, you will be asked questions that have not much to do with governance, where the individual will want you to really answer that question. So my advice would be to try to figure out, is that question a governance question or is it a management question? If it is a governance question, you should address yourself to it, in my opinion. If it is a management question or a purely political question, it would be my advice, important for you to figure out how you are going to diffuse that kind of question in advance without disrespecting the person who is asking the question. So giving legitimacy to the fact that this person is a person of stature who has asked something that he or she apparently wants you to answer. But you saying, Senator so-and-so, it would seem to me that that falls more on the management side of things. And so I am not in the position to be able to answer the management aspect of that. But this question has a policy or a governance thread underneath it. And therefore, I'm going to address myself to the policy question that underlies the specific question that you asked. So you can give credit to the questioner and yet get back on your policy page.
Thank you.
For example, how would your best friend describe your three worst traits?
You might have heard that question, I think.
That question, no. Now, is that a relevant question, really? I think it was a little bit in tongue-in-cheek, but I think it was also to challenge me in terms of how I react in situations. Because one of the things that, as a regent, you're put before a lot of different groups of people. You have irate citizens of Minnesota. You have all sorts of different people. So part of it is how do you handle a situation that is obviously maybe not appropriate or inappropriate as a question or whatever, how do you respond to it? And you responded beautifully in terms of trying to separate what are the issues of the question itself. And I think that for the most part, you're not going to run into that. But like I said, every single person has an opinion. And so to that end, they're looking either for alignment or affirmation of their opinion or whatever from you as a candidate. So you have to handle that very carefully in terms of how you want to respond to the specifics of whatever the question is. It's a matter of trying to balance that out and being careful, you know. And you know, I think the other thing is to reiterate what Jim said a moment ago. You're going to see, you know, what you say is recorded in the minds of many people, and it does get extended. You know, your behaviors of how you respond or what you say or what you say about the current president or the regents or other people or whatever it may be, people are listening very carefully to that, you know, and also looking, you know, they're measuring that. They're saying, well, you know, throw the president under the bus, you know, in a response like that, or would you be acting as a regent saying, I need more information, I need more facts before I really, you know, give you a full opinion on something like that.
As you heard in Chairman Pulaski's opening remarks, and I thought for a while he thought you were visiting on you the sins of the RCAC. But as you know, not every regent has been recommended by this body, and therefore we welcome you, Ms. Hasten, and feel free. I'm sorry you don't have a nameplate, but feel free to ask questions. You're fully able to compete for a position as anyone in the state is. So, do you have any questions of these? And I want to invite you to certainly partake if you need to. So, if not now, later.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Good question. Thank you. As current regent and former regent, I was curious as to what your feelings were when Representative Pawlowski was commenting on the political process and how it has led to the malfunction or the board not operating as best as it could. What were your reactions to that? And were you feeling like, no, he's got it all wrong? Were you feeling like, yes, there were some very real problems? And what do you think going on those who are elected could do to help fight that?
Well, you don't have anything to say or do with the political process as it exists in the wider world. You only know the situation that is presented to you. And my advice would be that the position of a regent is not a political position. You are, and Representative Pawlowski said this, is that he was first and foremost a representative for his constituency and for his state and for the nation, and then only for was he a representative of his party. And I would agree with that completely. But I think there's something else in here with your question about is this a party question, is it a political question? The Board of Regents is the selection process is a highly, highly political process. The process of governing should not be. Once you are elected to the Board of Regents, your job is to serve the University of Minnesota. And I think I would take distinction, or I think I would disagree with what Representative Pawlowski implied. I don't know if he was saying this, but I thought he implied in the question that one of you asked, or the question that you asked about the role of student regents, how should you behave or think about that? When you are elected one of 12 regents, you are one of 12 regents. And your job then is to represent all of Minnesota. You have a perspective because you are a student. You have a perspective because you live in the 2nd district or the 5th district or the 1st district. You have a perspective because you are a finance manager or an attorney or a doctor. You are not carrying the water for any of those groups. You are not carrying the water. I didn't carry the water for the 6th district. I listened to what people in the 6th district had to say, and then I balanced that with what I knew to be the value and the importance of the university statewide. You will listen to what students have to say, I hope. I mean, you will listen to what your district has to say. You will listen to what your constituency groups has to say, and then you will set that aside. And we'll say, I'm here for the University of Minnesota. I'm not here to represent this particular point of view. It would be a serious error, I think, for someone on any governing body. But that's different than what senators and representatives experience. Senators and representatives are acting on behalf of their constituents that elected them out of their district. Yours is a different ballgame. Yours is a non-representational kind of a ball game. And it's important, I think, for you to be able to articulate that you understand the difference, that you value the fact that representatives and senators do have their constituents for whom they have a special responsibility. You do not, in my opinion.
I don't think I could add much more to that in terms of what's been said. I think that, you know, it's about accountability, you know, overall to the state of Minnesota. And I driving it down into a constituency or a political piece. As I mentioned, the more that you can stay above the political piece of it, you know, the question is, well, are you Republican or Democrat? And, you know, you should be able to respond. How are you going to handle that question? You know, my response in some instances was, you know, I'm running because I want to represent the people of Minnesota. So you preface that. They still want to know if you're a Republican or Democrat. That's fine. You know, let that. But you set the stage, as Maureen just pointed out, because once you're past that, this whole process here at the Capitol, then you are representative of the people of Minnesota. And trying to stay above just the political dynamics, and there's some legislators that will try to draw you in. Well, what do you think about this candidate or that candidate? There's nothing to be won by getting drawn into those kinds of discussions as a candidate. You want to stay above all that. you know, let the politics stay to the politicians, and you march on and do what you need to do to represent yourselves.
Councilmember Josephson.
Going to what both of you were just speaking to, in particular, former Regent Reed, about not representing anyone. I think one of the benefits that you have in being able to take the stance that Regent Reed addressed is the fact that there are 8 student representatives with voice, with board at all times, who are there to express the student position on things. And sharing that fact, because potentially some of the legislators don't know that and may think that you should be carrying the water, as Regent Reed says.
Councilmember Sundstrom, do you have any advice for these candidates? Or Ms. Buck?
I just got some very good advice. If the representatives or senators ask you what party you belong to, ask them, what party would you like me to belong to?
I'll give you that advice. There's some meaning in that. There's some wisdom in that.
Ms. Buck?
The only thing I can say is what Representative Pulaski said, get to know who's on the committees. That's first and foremost, I think, important to do. And then get to know some of the other people within the legislature. Actually getting to know their backgrounds a lot of times will get you a way to get the conversation started. When I first started in the position I'm in, I looked, and I'm a huge Colorado fan, so anybody that I saw that was went to the University of Colorado, even CSU, I started it off with that. So that would be a good way to get to know them. Start with the personal level and then ask more about your actual position as a regent.
I'm going to reserve your comments for when you close, Harriet. Any other questions? I'm going to kind of target ending at 4 o'clock. I think we don't need to stay to the full time unless at that time there are more questions. But Mr. Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To both regents, Senator Bonhoff made a comment about fundraising being a big issue for a regent, and I'm just curious if you found that to be true in your experiences, and how big a piece is that play?
Absolutely not. I would love to talk with Senator Bonhoff more about what she meant by that, but the University of Minnesota has a foundation whose purpose is to advance the university's fundraising. Other private boards and private not-for-profit boards, the board members are often selected because of their fundraising capability and process. That is not on the job description of a University of Minnesota regent. So I think if that were to come up, the way to handle it would be to recognize that private funding and corporate funding and partnerships with the university is extremely important, and that's why a well-functioning University of Minnesota Foundation is important.
Let me just respond, because I agree with what Maureen just said. I made my first 10 months into this. I've spent a lot of time at a lot of different events. I'm usually aware of who are significant donors, significant partnerships, significant research partnerships or collaborations, and things that are unfolding. And to the extent that I talk to these people, a lot of times they'll ask questions and whatever. I never try to get into this any type of fundraising, because I don't know the protocols and what the procedures are in terms of what they're doing internally. There's way too many donors to be able to stay on top of that whole thing of what they're doing by department and by everything else. But I do make it a point to always greet, you know, all guests or all people in settings. And I'll use going to the bowl game. There was a number of donors that attended that event that went there on their own or whatever. And I interacted with a number of them, and I welcome the opportunity in terms of what it is. But it isn't any different. I don't treat them any differently than any other alum that would be at an event or attending something. It's part of our role, because we are ambassadors for the university in part. And what Gene had talked about there in terms of the regents being handcuffed, or they were told they couldn't talk to legislators or whatever. I know certainly my experience now with President Kaler is entirely different. I think he welcomes the interaction and the visibility of the regents in terms of what their participation will be in events. And legislatively, he's included us in many of the presentations, and they make it a point to make sure that people are aware that we are attending things. So it's a whole different approach than what Representative Pawlowski was talking about.
I want to ask this table to take just a slight role reversal here. All of you, I suspect, have met with at least one legislator in your campaign, if you will. And you heard from those legislators questions about the university, and you, as candidates, not as regents, although we have an exception, would have a hard time answering that. I think there are two, our regent and our former regent, and actually our current regent. What question, play legislator interviewing a candidate, what did one of them say to you that you couldn't answer, that you'd like to have a good answer for? What question came up from a legislator about the U that you really didn't have a good answer, and these people can tell you what they would have said with their experiences? Am I making myself clear about that? If you were a legislator and were interviewing Mr. Devine, and one of them asked you a real question, real live fire question, and you didn't have a good answer, here are the people that could give you a good answer. Is that a question that anybody has? Dennis, I'll call on you. Was there a question that if you would ask as a speak as you were a legislator, that somebody, don't say who asked you the question, but think about what you would like to know.
Regent Devine, since you've been on the Board of Regents for the last 1.5 years, 2 years, what has, in your opinion, sir, is the greatest issue, challenge that the University of Minnesota will face over the next 2 to 3 years?
Well, what I would immediately go and defer back to is really what are the goals of the current administration? Because the goals of the current administration are predicated and built upon collaboration that happens with the Board of Regents and setting policy about what it is we're looking to do and to carry out. And so I would drop back into that agenda of items. And if you look specifically, 4-year graduation, financial accountability. Eric Kaler, if you look at his inaugural, original inaugural talk that he gave or speech that he gave, it outlines his agenda, and that agenda in part was really predicated on what was laid out by the Board of Regents prior to his arrival. And part of the search process that identified very certain, specific goals. Underneath the website of University Relations, you'll find a number of documents that would be valuable to you if you're looking for, background information. Eric's presentation last week to Senate Higher Ed should be posted by now, and there is 20-some slides which address the issues of the Wall Street Journal article, point-specific. Not that you have to become experts in that, but there's information there. So in answering the question, I would be consciously aware of specifically what are the goals of the board right now. Four-year graduation costs, student, the fact that we rank number one in the Big Ten, the number of amount of indebtedness that students are leaving with the University of Minnesota, those are all agenda items that have been specifically identified by the board that are now part of the docket of, what the administration has got now in terms of what they're doing to carry out.
Ms. Reed, do you have any elaboration on that?
What went through my mind when you asked the question were two things. First of all, the University of Minnesota can only succeed when it has a clear notion of what it wants. And that is found in strategic documents, in statements that have been made by the administration, and I would know those cold. And I would also know whether you agree or disagree with them. And maybe you have a very sharp disagreement with a particular position, but resolving that is important. So what are the issues that the president has said are on the agenda? But then the other thing I was thinking, and I was thinking this actually when Representative Pawlowski and Senator Blanup were making their remarks, is that many people today would say that higher ed is broken. The model for higher ed is broken. And so fixing the model for higher ed has got to be on the agenda of every institution. Why is the model broken? The model is broken not because one group somewhere said we're not going to play games. So the model is not broken because the legislature has defunded the university over this last 6 years.
You could blame them, but
that wouldn't be very productive, and it wouldn't be honest. It wouldn't be a full picture. The model is broken because the expense of higher ed is going through the roof. Well, who is responsible for that, and how do we address that? The model is broken because students' economic conditions right now put stress on them and their families. That's not something that the university can fix, but that is the absolute reality for students in Minnesota and elsewhere that want to come. So the model is broken for several different reasons. So if you would buy into the notion, as I do, that the model is broken, it needs to be reassessed. There are three or four parts of that model that need to be fixed, and it's not going to be easy. Nobody should expect that you can come forward with an answer to that when all the gurus can't come up with the answer.
Let me just add one more point to this in terms of this modeling. If you look at our state budget, and that's the state budget decided here, voted on, enacted here, if you look at the defunding that's happened across education, not just higher education, but K-12 and education as a whole, healthcare in the state has absorbed. So as healthcare expenses have broadened over the state budget, higher ed and K-12 ed has suffered. And so it's a priority system that the legislature, in part, has, I don't think, intentionally gone down the list and say, we're going to defund the University of Minnesota. What's happened is the squeaky wheel has gotten greased on certain aspects of the budget, which the pie has been divided. Education has just ended up with less money because healthcare has absorbed significantly more in terms of total dollars. And then the other component that I failed to mention that I should have mentioned right away was research. The research mission of what we are as a priority is also very significant. And one of the things that Eric President Kaler has talked about extensively is reinvestment in the research component of what has to be done here in Minnesota. And so that's another very, very significant investment area that's going to be looked at, I think, carefully within the committee structure here is what do we need specifically to be funding? And I think the legislature will react to that positively because they understand it can be a game changer in job creation and how we operate as an institution.
We're approaching the last call for questions. I want to make sure someone has with these astute teachers here. Take advantage of it. Maureen.
If I could just give a little story and maybe one final piece of advice. When I was running in 97, I didn't know beans about the process. Many times it's important not to know what you're getting into before you get into marriage, motherhood, other things might fall into that category. But I called up the outgoing regent from the district that I was hoping to serve, whom I did not know, and I said to this person, I'm wanting to apply to the Board of Regents. What advice do you have for me? I would appreciate a few minutes of your time. And this person said, well, my advice to you is not to run. So-and-so, and a person was named, so-and-so has the process all sewn up. And you would not want to embarrass yourself. This is a quote. You would not want to embarrass yourself by running for a position and losing. And I thought, well, this person doesn't know this girl. That's about all I needed to know to make sure that. But the point is that someone wanted to chill me out. And
a spurious reason was given for doing that. So my reason for telling that story is you only know why you want to run. And you will hear all kinds of stuff from all different... You go to the fourth floor here, and you'll hear a certain thing on one end, a different thing on the other end. You go to the first floor, you hear something different. And so listen to it and then promptly forget it. Because if you really want to be on the Board of Regents, the only thing you can control is how hard you work, how thoughtful you have been, and how you put yourself forward. And all the political stuff, half of what you hear is not going to be true anyway. About another 100%. About half of what you hear is not going to be true. About 25% or more is going to be contrary to fact and intended for another purpose that you will never be able to discern. And only a few percent of it is going to be applicable to you. And to your earlier point, Mr. Erickson, you don't know what that is. So my advice is know why you're in this. Know that it is very important. It's very important for the University of Minnesota to have an extraordinarily strong, knowledgeable, and team-like group that is leading it. And then work your hardest and forget all of the negative stuff that comes your way, and you'll have good days and you'll have bad days, and only in the end will you know whether you've been successful. But do not rely on anybody else's advice and assessment of what your chances are. Because if you get chilled out, you for sure won't succeed.
I would agree. And then for you, those of you that are students here, you have a resume item for the rest of your life. I was a finalist as a candidate for the Board of Regents of the University of Minnesota, which in the scope of looking for a job and after you finish school and as you move along, isn't all bad. There's something good comes out of it, even if you are not successful in your endeavor, you've at least got something that is recognized. Because a lot of people, anybody that understands the process, will know that even getting as far as all of you have gotten sitting here in this room is no slam dunk deal. congratulations to all of you.
That underscores that we feel our rec committee feels that you certainly are the best of the best, and we appreciate you doing that. I'm going to, as we come, and before I ask my co-chair to our commission co-chair to speak, I'm just going to turn the tables on one of the members here. There's one person in the room that knows much more about how this building and the one across the street operates, and he's here as an advisee, but I wonder if he'd be gracious enough to, Mr. Johnson, be an advisor to these people, even though you might be competing against some of them.
Nice.
How would you advise these folks with all your experience and your resume and your you by far have more experience and knowledge of this process than anybody?
Thank you, and thank you the ARCAC members for serving and your colleagues who are not here. I know you're volunteers and it takes a great deal of time, and we all have one goal in mind, that's making the university a better place which to teach students and betterment of the state. A couple thoughts as we were talking. The history of the selection of the Board of Regents has changed. I did serve in this body 28 years, and someone likened the selection of the Board of Regents early on is to trying to catch an ice cube at the July 4th parade. it kind of moves around on you. Just when you think you have it kind of figured out, it switches on you. And what Dr. Reed talked about, much of the kind of chatter, and there is some chatter that goes on. Know who you are and why you want to be a regent. Second of all, I did some research a few years ago what other states do, land-grant colleges. Nebraska runs statewide. And a friend of mine is a regent. He spent $90,000 to become a regent. And Michigan is appointed by the governor, 7 members, highly political. Texas, whoever raises the most money for the governor gets appointed. So I'm thinking.
And a robe, too. They get a robe.
And a robe, too. So there's no perfect way of selecting regents for a land-grant university. I think that this is a good vetting process that we go through. It's not handed to any of us. It wasn't handed to me the first time around. It won't be handed to me this time or any of us. The advice of visiting with 201 members is, or as many as you can. When I listen to my two former colleagues, the chairs of respective committees, keep in mind they represent in part some public opinion about what is occurring in higher ed. It may be a private school, it may be a state school, maybe the University of Minnesota. They have heard about higher education. It may have been a parent about tuition. It may have been this, may have been that. They reflect, I take it seriously, they reflect some public opinion. I didn't say all public opinion, but it is public opinion. And we as regents and potential regents do reflect public opinion. Finally, as I sat there at this table a couple weeks ago in front of the RCAC, he set it all aside. And if I were a legislator making a decision, I would want to know how that person is able to get in their thought process from A to B to C for the betterment of the university. In other words, how do you think? How do you analyze? How do you do your homework? Because you do have to do your homework and then put it into the hopper and move forward. So, I guess, Mr. Erickson, that's kind of the summation of... the other thing is opportunity to listen, as Ben's previously said, but also for we as candidates to provide some information about the University of Minnesota, what this great institution is and what it does. And if we don't have the answer... I don't have the answers. I'm a six-year incumbent. I write it down, and I do some research. I get back to them. Because don't tell someone something that's not true. Just say, I don't know, but I need to talk to someone or get some research. Because saying one thing, come back the next week and say, you know what, that wasn't true. Now we're going backwards. To the student regents, I was asked this in the RCAC. What about student region? 12 equal members. Men, women, whatever age, whatever, it's 12 regents with election certificate that all have a viable, important part of governance. And Dr. Reed, you said it. Took me a little while to learn that. Governance versus administration. And there's a real important distinction about that. So, all kinds of reasons, all kinds of talents, abilities around the room here. Finally, you know what? This is hard work. This is hard work traveling these halls. And I'll conclude with this. God rest his soul. Pinky McNamara was a regent. I was minority leader of the Senate, and I saw Mr. McNamara stand down in the hall. And he looked about this time of the day like he had no friends, and he was tuckered out. I said, Mr. McNamara, come with me. Sat down in my office, had a cup of coffee, and we talked. And I knew his brother, but I didn't know Pinky McNamara very well. And in my mind, as he began to talk about the strategies and making the university better, that's where I decided where my vote was going to go. And I told him over that 10-minute cup of coffee, because he had a heart and the ability to make decisions about the good of the University of Minnesota, which he did, and met an untimely death much too early, but he was an asset to this university. The point is, you never know when you're talking to somebody what tilts or what you say and you don't say. So we're kind of on trial. We're on the long stage here for a while. That's why I want to know the schedule. Is this ever going to end? No.
Thank you.
We'll get that. That'll be good. So.
Thank you for sharing, Regent Johnson. That's generous of you. We will get you as we can. We will ask the staffs to get you send out what we know. We do know that unlike some past years, the Senate committee intends to have you in for a one-on-one or a presentation, and I don't know if they have those dates yet or not, but do we know what those dates are?
February 5th.
Yes.
Okay. So.
And it is in the House schedule that the Brain Committee has been scheduled for February 5th.
You're supposed to get back to confirm with me, but I'm
supposed
to.
That's the joint convention.
The joint committee.
Yep.
Legislative.
6:30 in the evening.
So do these people now know that they have to go through one more month of this? My goodness. Can't we move that up?
6th of February?
Okay.
Are you sure it's not January?
No, it's just February.
I'm sorry. As we close, I'd like to talk specifically to the student region candidates because our board was very, I think, attempted to send only two names forward in the spot where there's one, four names forward in the spot where there's two. But we made an exception to that minimus rule by sending three candidates forward for the single spot. And we did so with challenging you to both be candidates but also spokesmen for the university. You are students. You can tell far better than any of us if we were interviewing what it's like there. And I would encourage you, as you have those interviews, to be a proactive advocate for the university and informer of what's going on at the university, as well as a candidate. And we thank you for doing that, and that's why we thought three would be better than two, and we appreciate your service. Ms. Porter.
Sure. Well, first of all, I want to thank each of you who are putting yourselves through this interesting and grueling process. You will come out on the other side of it with new learning and new experiences that you may not have ever thought that you might be seeking or desire. I want to share with you just a little bit about the history of how you did end up here today, for those of you who were invited as the names that were forwarded on to the legislature. There were 5 hours of voting to come up with the slate of candidates that we put forth. And I'd like to share with you that you were put forward by a bipartisan Regents Council Advisory Commission, along with a bipartisan leadership team of Pat Duncanson, myself, and Dave Fisher. And I share this with you because I want to lead into a four-letter word, and that four-letter word is love. It is love for the university that we all share, and that is why the Regents Council Advisory Committee is here and why we do what we do. The voting was so difficult this time because all of you were so highly qualified. Sometimes things shake out pretty early in the beginning, and candidates that we don't feel are ready today to become a regent or could be ready by the time the actual election occurs, because you become a regent the day you are elected, and literally almost the next day, if not the day after that, you are sitting in regent meetings. We feel that we have an obligation to put forth the strongest slate of candidates to support the mission and growth and sustainability and longevity of the university to serve the state of Minnesota. So that is why the decisions were made in the way that they were. I'm happy, certainly, to share any of my perspective offline. It was a very energizing and also draining afternoon in that we wanted... it would have been wonderful if we could expand the Board of Regents and had 18 regents, but it doesn't work that way. We really did keep our selection criteria in mind in terms of what we heard from current regents, from all of the constituents, in terms of the needs on the Board of Regents and for the university going forward. So I'd like to reinforce that. The second and last thing I'd like to say is just procedural. In the application, you created essays, and there was a box for you to check whether those essays could become public or not. Without your permission, they will not be shared. If you did check that box, those essays will not be shared, unless you want them shared. So they can be requested, but we are not going to automatically blanket send out the essays across the board for those boxes that were checked. It is up to you as to whether you choose to share those as you go through the process. And with that, I would like to just say thank you again for your time, and to Mr. Erickson for
coordinating this. This is a very important part of the process, and I wish all of you the best of luck in your process.
And it was very interesting. If I sent you an email, it would have four words in it, and I would capitalize it. Thank you, and good luck.
Thank you. Yeah, perfect.